A few people have come to me to wonder what it's like to be a new minister in this congregation and to have been through what we've been through together. So I want to stop and say for a moment what I have told them. It has been a lot. I believe that it has brought me closer to you and closer, and you closer to me, to one another's hearts and hurting places, faster than I expected. But know that you are so easy to love, even when life is hard. I am blessed to be well cared for by my friends and colleagues. And ministry in general is not ever what we expect it to be. Now, I want to pause a moment and say something entirely different from what our sermon topic was briefly. The last 6 weeks of simply being a resident in Santa Clarita Valley, and the few weeks prior to that of simply being a member of this congregation, a church that lost a beloved friend, Rich Jaffke, this time has been dauntingly challenging. Simply being a person in this world of climate change, political trauma is difficult enough. But Santa Clarita, you have had just a lion's share of stuff to cope through. And that's not to say that the feelings that we're having now will last forever. But what happens is people are affected not only by the losses and pains of the incidents that have fallen upon us, but there also may be a kind of hypervigilance. I've heard echoes of this vigilance from some of you, and I've even said to myself, what could possibly be next? Now, I share with you this not to state the obvious or to bring you to a place of self-pity, but because knowledge, Rabbi Stephen Roberts says, is power. Knowledge is power, and we need power. We need fuel for the journey ahead, and reflecting briefly about where we find ourselves in the life cycle of disaster. Through that, there's more power we can gain back from what tragedy has stolen. Part of that reemergence toward our own power is finding our relationships to ourselves and to our own bodies. And wherever each of us is right now, finding a relationship to spirit that is accessible to us. Everyone who has gone through a trauma or loss deserves an accessible doorway into spiritual practice and meaning. And truthfully, friends, a sermon may or may not be that doorway. I want to share a story of a village in Transylvania, a Unitarian heartland and the tradition of its people who survived against all odds. But if you find yourself checking out in the next few minutes, I only wish that you do not fault yourself for it. And well, not me either. Instead, notice your own breath, but do not seek to change it. Give your toes or fingers a wiggle, maybe elegantly, maybe frantically. You might feel the polite thing to do is to jump back to the sound of my voice or try to relocate your place in the story, but I promise it's okay. You have my full permission to instead simply notice the chair beneath you, the earth that is holding you, and move just a little. One motion at a time to become present with your surroundings. Good deal? All right. So I want to tell you a story about a village in remote part of Transylvania called Bosutdefallen. I'll say that one more time. Bosutdefallen. Home to Hungarian-speaking Unitarians. Now, these Unitarians are not our direct spiritual ancestors, but more progenitors of thought or cousins, friends, with whom we have found a relationship as Unitarian Universalists today through kinship and mutual support, but where we have immense cultural, political, and historical difference. from us as North Americans. So in this village, a Bosufalen, I'm going to say it one time, Bosufalen, over its 400-year history, this village was unique for its quality and quantity of religious diversity. People there visited their neighbors' places of worship, and the festivals of all traditions were shared and celebrated by all. This village included congregations of Catholics, Reformed Christians, Unitarians, Lutherans, Jews, and Sakai Jews, for this was a land called the Sakai Land in Hungarian. While they enjoyed substantial numbers of each group, by the 20th century, forces of anti-Semitism had moved through the region in multiple periods, and the Holocaust had reduced the Jewish population down to almost nothing and some of its allies. This small village was the home to the last remnants of that community whose ancestors had adopted Jewish practice within their Unitarian village. And then came the rule of Romanian communist dictator Ceausescu in 1989. The residents of the village were told that the government had finally approved a long-anticipated project to build a dam for flood control of the local river. The village was doubly pleased with this new project as it brought not only the public works access they needed, but also work for the community members. They were given written plans, but when they started working on these plans and proceeding with construction, they had a horrible shock. They realized that the project they had begun building was not the one they requested. They were not working on flood control. Instead, they were constructing a dam that would eventually completely flood the village. This was part of Ceausescu's plan to annihilate Hungarian ethnicity by destroying villages and forcibly relocating people into developments where their cultural heritage and identity would not be maintained. When the villagers realized this, they tried and scurried to sabotage the plan, but sadly, it was too late. They had to leave their homes quickly before floodwaters entered. After centuries of tyranny, with brief heydays of religious tolerance and sharing, the village was hit again with catastrophe. Imagine with me the gathering of those who had fled the flooding of their village, reconvening again once more to practice their shared faith and religions. Huddled in a room lit by only candlelight, we gather in the house of one neighbor, tucked into their home. Someone goes to a curtain in the side of the room and moves it aside to reveal a hidden sanctuary. We move together into the space and sit, shoulder to shoulder. An elder pulls from a bookcase a book of Psalms, a candle is passed, and the sacred text is read. Words of praise that remind us that all life, all prayer, is story, including our own. When I searched for love, the beloved answered within my heart, and all my fears flew away. You let your eyes fall closed and hear the breath of those beside you. You listen for the testimony of the psalmist that reminds us of our own lives, lives that are faith in action, actions that bring us out of our turmoil and into community once more. Oh, open your hearts, friends, that your pain and loneliness be turned to love. Your grandmother and great-grandmothers, our ancient forebears, survived somehow in some completely improbable way. Their dreams were ours to receive just by practicing our traditions in community. The psalm continues, Look to the beloved and your emptiness will be filled. Your face will radiate love. Beholding the dance of the candle flame, you see another person across a small space. The hollow despair begins to melt as you see reflections of those who survive alongside you, who reassure you of love's existence beyond all odds. Even after such injustice, we need not build a dam around our hearts. We find common ground in our aliveness, huddled into a room, not denying what we have survived, not denying the heartbreak that resides within us. The final line of the psalm, one with love, you are never alone. We are members of one another, not just by the ways we celebrate one another's life's passages or festivals like our harvest dinner this evening, or along the intersections of tradition or belief, but as co-imitators, as semblances of those who fought for us to exist. We do not know why some have lived to join us, why we suffer so in our carrying forward, but we are soothed by striving together to see the world still as loving. In doing so, we might respond by residing in the world with love. One with love, you are never alone. Amen.